Penguin Random House Audio presents In Too Deep, a Reacher novel by Lee Child and Andrew Child. Read for you by Scott Brick. For Richard Pine, 10 years and counting. Chapter 1. The pain hit first, then the sound followed, the way lightning beats thunder in a storm. The pain was in Jack Reacher's right wrist. It was sharp and sudden and hot, and it was more than strong enough to eclipse the dull, throbbing ache that filled his head. The sound was a single, round, lingering note, metal on metal, distinct, but inconsequential next to the ringing in his ears. The pain and the sound came after he tried to move his arm. That was all Reacher knew. He had been asleep. No, somewhere deeper and darker than sleep. And when he floated to the surface, he was rocked by waves of dizziness. He was lying on his back, not in a bed, not on the ground, on something smooth and artificial and cold. The chill was seeping through his shirt and into his shoulder blades and down his spine. A sharp ridge was cutting into his calves. His head felt like it was being crushed against the hard surface. So he had drawn his right elbow back, ready to lever himself up. Or he had tried to. And it wasn't just the discomfort that had stopped him. Something was fastened around his wrist, preventing it from moving more than a couple of inches. Something cinched in tight. It bit into his skin, but that wasn't what hurt the most. It was one of the bones in his forearm, maybe more than one. Some kind of major damage had been done beneath the skin. That was clear. Reacher tried to move his left arm. There was no pain, but that wrist was also restrained by something sharp. So was his left ankle. So was his right. He couldn't see what he was attached to or what he was bound with because there was no light, not the slightest glimmer. The space he was in was completely dark. There was no noise now that the metallic clink had died away, and no movement of the air. Reacher had no idea where he was, no idea how he had gotten there, but someone must have brought him and shackled him. And whoever had done those things was going to rue the day. That was for damn sure. The same time Reacher was slipping back into oblivion, a man was standing at the side of the road, 5 miles away to the north, watching for smoke or flames. He had used plenty of names over the years, but at that moment he was calling himself Ivan Vidic. He was heavy-set and a little stooped, which made him look shorter than the 6'2" he claimed on his driver's license, and his bald head was all sharp angles and ridges, like it had been carved from stone by someone without much skill. His car was parked by the second of a set of 3 switchbacks. It was a notorious spot for accidents. The turns were sharp and close together and poorly lit. The road was separated from a steep drop by a wide shoulder and a rusty safety rail, and the camber coming off the apex of the first bend was way out of whack. Something to do with ancient geological deposits deteriorating and undermining the layers of bedrock deep down, way below the surface. Nothing that couldn't be fixed, given the right amount of money. But money was scarce in those parts, so the local Department of Roads and Bridges had just thrown up a couple of warning signs. They didn't help to keep vehicles from crashing, but the county lawyers said they might keep the department from getting sued in the aftermath. An SUV had crashed there a little earlier that day, a Lincoln Navigator. It had left the road, clipped a tree, rolled 3 times, and come to rest back on its wheels. Its roof was caved in, its hood was dented, its doors were bent and twisted, and all its windows were starred and opaque. Vidic had watched the accident unfold. He'd had no alternative because he had been following, driving fast and sticking close behind. He had mashed his brakes the moment the Lincoln lost control and had skidded to a stop while the other vehicle was still moving. Then he had jumped out and crept closer to the wreck, sniffing the air for gasoline fumes and straining his ears for any hint of fuel dripping from a fractured line or cracked tank. The Lincoln had wound up in bad shape, but its driver had come out even worse. He was dead. His neck was broken. There was no doubt about that. Vidic had smiled when he saw what had happened. It wasn't the outcome he'd expected, but it was one he could use. More than that, it was like the answer to a prayer. An echo from his childhood floated into his head. God helps those who help themselves. His grin grew wider. Then he turned his attention to the passenger. At first, Vidic thought the guy was bound for the morgue, too. But when he checked, he felt a pulse. So he adjusted his diagnosis. The guy just had a concussion and a broken wrist. Judging by the sharp edge of the bone, he could see jutting out beneath his skin. The guy's size had saved him. He looked huge, comfortably 6'5", even slumped against the door, easily 250 pounds, and all bone and muscle, no fat. Vidic had called a couple of guys for help, and while he waited for them to arrive, he had hauled the driver and the passenger out of the wreckage. That wasn't easy. The driver's head was flopping around all over the place, and his body was slack and soft and difficult to grip. The passenger was worse because of his size and shape. His arms were bigger than the driver's legs. His wrists were too broad for Vidic to wrap his fingers around. Vidic was out of breath and sweating, despite the cool air, when he heard wheels on the asphalt behind him, and he only just had time to finish rifling the passenger's pockets and transferring the few possessions he found there to his own. The new guys had shown up in a Ford pickup truck, which turned out to be a practical choice. There was no way they'd have been able to manhandle the passenger's unconscious body onto the back seat of a regular car. He was too big, too awkward. They wouldn't have had enough room to maneuver. So the three of them heaved him up onto the load bed and tossed the driver's corpse in next to him. The guy who had been driving the pickup was called Darren Fletcher. He was a couple of inches taller than Vidic, but slimmer and maybe 20 pounds lighter. He slammed the tailgate into place, then turned to Vidic and said, "You saw it happen?" Vidic nodded. "When you called and said it was Gibson's Lincoln, I was hoping you were wrong." "Have you ever known me to be wrong?" Fletcher grunted and said, "Walk me through it." Vidic shrugged. "Gibson was driving pretty slow, pretty careful. I caught up to him by chance. I was heading back to base. Guess he was too. He kept going the same speed for maybe a mile. His usual steady Eddie self. Then he must have seen my car. Seen it, but not realized it was mine because all of a sudden he tried to lose me. He hit the gas, but at exactly the wrong time." Vidic nodded at the wrecked vehicle. "As you can see, Exhibit A. Did you flash your lights, honk your horn, make it look like you were up for a race?" "No. Why would I? I'm not 16. So why did he try to lose you? Or whoever he thought you were?" Vidic shrugged again. "Paranoia is my guess. It's in the air. It started when O'Connell died, and it's worse since Bowery disappeared." Fletcher was silent for a moment. Then he said, "The big guy who was riding with Gibson, who is he?" "No idea." "He doesn't have ID?" "No." "Any luggage? A backpack, at least?" "Just this." Vidic took a pistol from his waistband and handed it to Fletcher. A Glock 17, the FBI's weapon of choice. Make of that what you will. Chapter 2. Fletcher and the other guy had taken off in the Ford and left Vidic to deal with the Lincoln. He had checked the glove box and the trunk for anything containing personal information, then turned his attention to the driver's seat. He had been ready to clean up any blood that had been spilled, but there wasn't any. Gibson's skin must not have been pierced in the accident, or at least not while his heart was still beating. Fittich had smiled. That made his next task easier. He glanced across to the passenger side and noted the position on the doorframe where the impact with the big guy's head had left a bloodstain. He took a knife from his pocket, made a nick on the pad of his left thumb, and squeezed a few drops of blood onto the frame of the driver's door in a corresponding spot, only around 3 inches lower. He grabbed the steering wheel, the gear shift. He adjusted the rearview mirror, prodded a bunch of climate control and entertainment system buttons. He took a cell phone from his pocket, double-checked that it was the right one, and jammed it down the side of the seat. Then he put his foot on the brake and turned the key. Nothing happened. Some kind of safety system must have shut off the ignition when the vehicle hit the tree, and isolated the fuel supply with any luck, Vittich thought. He used his knife to pry off the cover from the gear shift release, selected neutral, then opened the door and jumped down. He climbed into his own car, fired it up, pulled in behind the Lincoln, and gave it a gentle nudge. It rolled a couple of yards and ground to a halt. Vittich leaned a little harder on the gas. The Lincoln rolled faster. It kept going this time and picked up more speed, enough to help it bust through the safety rail and disappear into the darkness on the other side. Vittich had stopped his car and hurried to the gap the Lincoln had made in the rail. He could see the vehicle 50 feet below, on its roof, three wheels still turning. He had stood and watched. There was no explosion, no sign of fire. He waited 20 minutes to be sure. Then his remaining cell phone began to ring. The call was from a number he recognized. He hit the answer button and said, "Hey, Paris, what's up?" A woman's voice came on the line. It was low and curt and a little shaky around the edges. She said, "Is it true? Gibson's dead." "He is, yes. Another one bit the dust." "It was an accident?" Vittich didn't answer. Paris said, "I heard he crashed his car, broke his neck." "You heard right." "You saw it happen?" "The whole thing." "Someone was with him?" "A stranger." "What kind of stranger?" "Just some nobody hitching a ride. Nothing to worry about." "You sure?" "Absolutely. Because I can't help thinking. Bowery disappears, then a mystery guy shows up and just happens to hitch a ride with one of our crew? Sometimes coincidences happen. Maybe. Or maybe Bowery grew a conscience, ratted us out." "He didn't rat us out. That's not his style." "Then where is he?" "He stiffed us, is my guess. Made the exchange and ran off with the cash." "Why would he do that? It's pocket change next to what we've got coming. He knows what's at stake. He'd be nuts to run now. Unless he knows there won't be another payday. And how would he know that? Unless he made sure of it. Even if he wanted to, he couldn't have ratted us out. He doesn't have anything on us. He knows about the report. He doesn't have a copy. He doesn't need a copy. He knows what it's about. Broadly speaking, he knows where I got it. Either one of those things would be enough to get every agent in the lower 48 crawling up our asses before we could blink." "All right, take a breath. Trust me. What happened to Gibson had nothing to do with Bowery, and nothing to do with the stranger." "What happened to Gibson? So it wasn't an accident?" Vittich didn't respond. "Gibson was a good driver. He knew that road. He wouldn't just crash his car for no reason." "So the crash wasn't an accident, was it? Tell me straight." "It was. And it wasn't." "That's your idea of straight? Listen, I found something out about Gibson earlier today. Found out what? I can't say, not on the phone. But it has implications. What kind of implications? First and foremost, we need to shift up our timetable. By how much? We have 48 hours maximum. Then we need to be gone, like we never existed. That's not possible. It is. Grab what you need from the house, just the essentials, not so much as to be suspicious. We have the one physical job to take care of. Then we can cash in on the report later. The job's not happening for 5 days. It can't. We have to wait for the final delivery. No, we have to take what's there now. 80% of something is better than 100% of nothing. I'll talk to Fletcher, get him to move up the schedule. And if he won't, we'll walk. I don't want to walk. I set the job up, found the opportunity. I'm invested. I get that. But, end of the day, that job's a luxury. It's not make or break. We have to stay focused. Think about the future, our new lives, not what we're leaving behind. Paris didn't reply. That just leaves one loose end. Vidich glanced down at the wrecked Lincoln. He thought about the two men he'd dragged out of it, Gibson and the giant stranger. One dead, one alive. For now, anyway. He raised the phone back to his ear and said, I'm going to need a bunch of phosphorus. Can you bring some to the house? Well, I can try. How much? Enough to burn a body. Completely. Prints, teeth, DNA. The full 9 yards. Chapter 3. Reacher was again woken by a sound, a door opening this time. His eyes were closed, but he could sense light, fairly dim, then much brighter. He heard footsteps approaching, one set. They came close, then stopped. Reacher opened his eyes, slowly, against the glare. The dizziness had receded a little, but everything looked pale and washed out, like a watercolor made by a beginner who didn't throw enough paint into the mix. A man was standing by Reacher's side. He was wearing jeans and a gray t-shirt. He was slim, like a runner, and maybe 6'4". His fists were clenched, and Reacher thought he looked angry, maybe even scared, but was trying to hide it. The man said, I'm Darren Fletcher. Who are you? Reacher ignored him. If they'd searched him, Fletcher would already know his name. And if Fletcher hadn't searched him, he wasn't worth wasting breath on. Reacher concentrated on his surroundings instead. He saw that the restraints on his wrists and ankles were handcuffs, and that he was secured to a rectangular steel table. The floor was covered with white tiles, and the walls were lined with steel shelves. The place was some kind of food storage or preparation area, Reacher figured. Then he turned back to Fletcher because the thought of food was making him feel sick. This silent act, it isn't helping you, Fletcher said. You need to understand how serious this situation is. A man is dead. He was my friend. So you need to tell me who you are. You need to explain why you were in his car and what made him go crazy and smash into a tree. Reacher couldn't remember anything about a car or a crash or a dead man, but he figured that wouldn't make for a strong negotiating position, so he said, release these cuffs. Then I'll tell you. Fletcher shook his head. Convince me you had nothing to do with my friend's death, then I'll unlock the cuffs. Reacher said nothing. Not smart. I can make you tell me if you don't start talking. Reacher said, can you? Because I can only see one of you. You don't want to test me, believe me. So be sensible. Convince me. Then you'll release me. Fletcher nodded. You have the key? Of course. Show it to me, No. Fletcher paused for a moment. Why? To demonstrate good faith. Prove you can keep your word. Fletcher sighed and pulled a small silver key out of his pocket. Satisfied? One more thing. Release my left hand. Talk first. Here's the problem. My left wrist is broken. I can feel it swelling. It's getting constricted by the cuff. That can be serious. The damage could be done by the time we've talked. I could lose my hand. Fletcher didn't respond, but he didn't put the key away. Come on, release one broken limb. What am I going to do with it? My three good ones will still be secure, and you have the only key. Release it, and I'll talk. Fletcher hesitated for another moment. A broken wrist had been mentioned at the scene of the accident. He remembered that. But he was a cautious man. He switched the key to his left hand, took the Glock that Vidic had given him from his waistband, and stepped forward, gun raised, finger on the trigger. Fletcher said, "Try anything, and I'll shoot you with your own gun." Reacher had no idea why Fletcher thought the gun was his, but he had no time to waste on questions. So he just said, "I get the picture." Fletcher kept the gun lined up on Reacher's face. He leaned down, inserted the key into the cuff around Reacher's left wrist, worked the lock. The cuff sprang open. It swung down empty and clanged against the table leg. Fletcher straightened up. The gun was still in his right hand. The key was still in his left. Reacher struggled to focus on either. The dizziness was building again, and the images were threatening to split into two. Reacher willed his vision to stay clear, then whipped up his hand and caught the Glock by its barrel. He forced it up and to the side. Then he jammed it back. The move was sharp and vicious, and Reacher kept it going until the gun was horizontal and the muzzle was pointing at Fletcher's chest. Fletcher's finger was trapped by the trigger guard. It was bent backward, all the way to its limit. Reacher pushed harder. Fletcher's knuckle joint gave way. Cartilage tore. Tendons ripped. Fletcher screamed and let go of the grip. Reacher let the gun fall and dragged his hand across Fletcher's body. He caught Fletcher's left wrist, pulled until Fletcher's hand was above his chest, then started to squeeze. Hard. Fletcher screamed again. Reacher increased the pressure. He could feel bones and ligaments begin to twist and crack. Fletcher screamed louder and dropped the key. The key hit Reacher's chest and bounced straight back up. It was spinning and sparkling and arcing away to the side. Reacher couldn't follow its flight. His vision was too blurred. He pictured it skittling off the shiny surface of the table and rattling down onto the floor tiles, in which case it might as well land in Australia for all the good it would do him. But then he felt something. It was like a butterfly landing on his right bicep. He still couldn't see what it was, but Fletcher stretched for it with his damaged hand. Reacher twitched his arm and felt something hard and cold slide down against his side. Fletcher tried to pull away. He scrabbled at the back of his waistband. A second gun was tucked in there, a Sig Sauer. He got it free, but he couldn't hold on to it. His broken finger wouldn't bend. Reacher heard the gun rattle onto the floor. He let go of Fletcher's hand and grabbed his neck instead. He found his Adam's apple, shifted his thumb down and to the side, did the same with his middle finger, then jammed both into the flesh of Fletcher's neck and pinched them together, crushing his carotid arteries. Fletcher howled and grabbed Reacher's wrist with his good hand. He pulled and heaved and scratched and gouged with his nails, but Reacher just increased the pressure. He held it for 5 seconds. 6. Fletcher kept on struggling. 7 seconds passed, and Fletcher's energy started to fade. 8 seconds. And that was all Fletcher could take. His brain was out of oxygen. He slumped forward. Reacher pulled his arm aside, and Fletcher collapsed face first onto Reacher's chest. Reacher gave himself a moment for his heart rate to subside, hoping the hammering in his head would die down with it. Then he slammed his fist into Fletcher's temple and let his unconscious body slide onto the floor. He retrieved the key from where it was wedged against his side, eased himself into a semi-sitting position, paused to fight a sudden wave of nausea and dizziness, then got to work on the cuff on his right wrist. He moved slowly to avoid jarring the damaged bones. He released his right ankle, his left. Then he swung his legs around to the side and stood uncertainly on the floor. Reacher was wearing his only pair of shoes. He had bought them years earlier, in England. They were quality items, expensive, solid and sturdy right out of the box, and the leather had only gotten harder with time and weather and uncompromising use. Now the toe caps were like steel. Reacher turned and kicked Fletcher in the head, partly to make sure Fletcher wouldn't regain consciousness anytime soon, and partly because he was pissed about his wrist and being dragged to this place against his will, and the whole business with the handcuffs. Reacher searched Fletcher's pockets using just his left hand. He came across a set of keys, which he took in case they would aid his escape, and to cause Fletcher extra inconvenience down the line. Next, he found a wallet, which he also took. He figured he would check it for ID or credit cards later, when he could see better. Then he retrieved the two fallen guns, crept to the doorway, and peered out. It led to a kitchen. It was large and was kitted out with all kinds of appliances and machines Reacher didn't recognize. He was no expert, but he figured it was the kind of place that would belong to a big private house rather than a restaurant or a hotel. Either way, there were no people around, which was what mattered. Reacher could see another door in the corner diagonally opposite. He started toward it, made it halfway across the space. Then the door opened. Reacher had the Glock in his left hand. He raised it. A man stepped into the room. He was heavy and stooped, and he had a strange angular head. The man paused for a moment, then said, "Reacher, no need for the gun. I'm here to help." Reacher didn't lower the gun. He said, "Who are you?" The man said, "A friend. I saved you from the car wreck." "How do you know my name?" "I found your things, kept them safe, so the others wouldn't get them. I have them right here." The guy gestured to his pocket. "Do you want them back?" Reacher nodded. "Do nothing stupid." The guy pulled out Reacher's expired passport, his ATM card, some banknotes, and a folding toothbrush. "You travel light, huh?" Reacher said, "Put them on the floor, then step back." "No time," the guy said. "We've got to hurry. The man in the car with you, who died? You remember him?" "No," Reacher said. "Well, that's awkward, because he was an FBI agent. Now he's dead, all hell's going to break loose. There'll be cops swarming everywhere. Hordes of agents, too, just as soon as they can get here. Every last one of them looking for somebody to carry the can for their buddy's death. And if you can't account for yourself, that someone is going to be you." Chapter 4. The guy with the angular head turned and ducked back out through the door, then reappeared a moment later when he realized that Reacher wasn't following. He threw up his arms in an exaggerated shrug and said, "Why aren't you moving? Don't you get it? We need to leave." Reacher stayed where he was. He tucked the gun in his waistband, took his things back from the guy, then said, "What is this place?" "That's your question. Right now. Are you crazy? You should be asking, what's the quickest way out of here? And please, Ivan, can you save my ass again? Can you give me a ride to someplace where I won't get thrown in jail?" "Ivan? Ivan Vidic, my name. Now come on, move it." "I'm not going anywhere. Nor are you. How hard did you hit your head? The police are coming. Let them come. I've done nothing wrong." "How do you know? You can't remember anything. And have you seen yourself in the mirror lately? Do you think the police will look at you and assume you're some kind of choir boy?" Reacher said nothing. Vidic closed his eyes for a moment and sighed. Okay, I get it. You wake up in a strange place. You don't know how you got here. You want answers. I can give them to you. But this is I know how I got here, Reacher said. Someone brought me. Darren Fletcher. I doubt he was working alone. So I want to know who else is involved. I want to know what is going on here. How do you know about Fletcher? We met. You did? When? Where? Just now. In there. Reacher gestured toward the door he had emerged from. He let you out of the cuffs? Vidic strode across to the door and peered into the room on the other side. Why would he? Vidic spotted Fletcher's inert body lying slumped on the floor. He turned and backed away. Wait, did you kill him? Is he dead? Reacher shrugged. He was breathing when I left him. Okay, that's good, I guess. Did you guys talk at all? Before you beat on him? No, that's why I'm asking you. Who else is involved? I want names. I want locations. Vidic took a deep breath. Look, now I really get it. You're pissed. You want payback. More payback, I guess, now that I've seen what you did to Fletcher. I respect that. But let me ask you something. How much does your lawyer get paid? I don't have a lawyer. That's what I figured. But Fletcher and his buddies? They do have lawyers. Ones who get paid $500 an hour, maybe more. Which means that if you're still here when the police show up and you all get thrown in the cells, Fletcher and the others will be on the street again before the public defender has even found out he has a new client. Then they'll disappear. You'll never catch up with them. If you stay here, it'll be like you're choosing to let them get away. But if you come with me, I'll help you. I'll tell you everything. The only thing I need you to do is come with me. Now. Reacher figured Vidic had a point. He'd gotten tangled up with the police in the past. More than once. Nothing had ever stuck, but getting cut loose always took time. More than it should. And wasting time was not going to help him get what he wanted. So he said, fine. Just do me one favor. What? Drop the Good Samaritan Act. I don't follow. You're not trying to help me. You're trying to save your own ass. Reacher followed Vidic into a kind of entrance hall. It was a large space, octagonal, with a tiled floor, leaded windows either side of a heavy studded oak front door, a crystal chandelier, wood panels on the walls, a bunch of oil paintings of outdoor scenes, and a staircase that divided three quarters of the way up and branched off in two separate directions. Reacher expected Vidic to make for the obvious exit, but when they reached the foot of the stairs, he peeled away and headed for a smaller, plain door on the far side. He was moving fast, and he placed his feet carefully to avoid making a noise. Reacher was slower and less discreet. Hey! Vidic spun around. His voice was a low hiss. Quiet! Reacher said, why? So no one will hear us. Vidic spoke slowly and stressed each word, like he was dealing with a child. No one like who? Well, for one, if Fletcher's here, you can bet Kane won't be far away. Who's Kane? Fletcher's buddy. His right-hand man. Acts like his bodyguard. A psychotic Neanderthal scumbag, essentially. Not someone you want to cross paths with.
Sounds like exactly who I want to cross paths with. Reacher raised his voice. Kane, can you hear me? Get your ass down here.
Vidic stretched up and tried to put his hand over Reacher's mouth.
What the hell are you doing?
Reacher pushed Vidic away, saving time. He raised his voice another notch.
Kane, this guy says you're a scumbag. Is that true? I kind of think it is.
Vidic sank down until he was sitting on the third step and covered his head with his hands.
Will you stop? You're going to get us both killed. Kane!
There was still no reaction. No angry voice, no heavy steps approaching from some other part of the building. Reacher turned to Vidic and said, "Seems like you're wrong. This King guy isn't here. So where else could he be?" Vidic straightened up.
"Why do you care? This isn't your mess to clean up. I'm giving you a way out. Why won't you take it?"
"Because I have a rule." "A rule? What are you talking about?" "People leave me alone. I leave them alone."
"And if they don't?"
"I don't."
"You know that bringing you here, this whole thing, it was Fletcher's idea, right? I didn't know what he was going to do. I was just trying to save your life. I thought that wreck you were trapped in was going up in flames."
"Kane, where is he and everyone else who's tied up in this?"
"You're never letting this go, are you?"
"Now you get it."
"Okay, give me a moment. I need to think."
Vidic's focus shifted to some distant imaginary horizon, and his eyes darted from side to side for a few seconds like a chess player planning his next moves. Then his gaze snapped back to Reacher's face, and he said,
"Come with me. I have an idea."
Chapter 5. Reacher expected that the door Vidic pushed through would lead to some kind of concealed exit, but it just opened onto another room. A small one, not much bigger than a generous closet. The air inside it was stale. It was heavy with cheap aftershave and a hint of secondhand cigar smoke. A blackout blind was pulled across its window, so the only light in the place came from a computer monitor on a battered metal desk that was shoved against the wall. The monitor looked bigger than normal, Reacher thought, more like a modest TV screen. Its display was divided into rectangles. There were three rows of four. Each of the images showed part of a building. Nine were interior shots. Three were exterior. Nothing was moving in any of them. There was no sign of any people, no one to capture and interrogate. Reacher was disappointed. Vidic leaned down and fiddled with the computer's mouse until the display rearranged itself. 10 of the rectangles disappeared. The remaining pair expanded until together they filled the screen. Both showed an external view. The one on the left covered a white Jeep sitting on a curved gravel driveway that was hemmed in by tall bushes with large pale leaves. The one on the right showed a formal garden. Reacher assumed it would have been immaculate at one time, but now the various plants were running wild with neglect. Vidic gestured to an office chair near the desk. One arm was missing, and its mesh seat was saggy and loose. He said, "Wanna sit?" Reacher shook his head. "Smart choice." Vidic kept his gaze on the screen. "So, you were right. I am trying to save my own ass. I can't have you anywhere near Fletcher or Kane. It's too big of a risk. If they find out I helped you, or if they figure it out, I'm dead meat. But there's something else you need to know." Vidic lowered his voice to a whisper. "I'm going to disappear very soon." "Why would I care?" "Because when I do, it won't matter what you tell Fletcher. It won't matter what conclusions he jumps to. So here's the deal. You sit tight for 24 hours, 48 tops. Then I'll give you Fletcher and Kane on a plate with a cherry on top. They have a job planned, a big one. Not far from here. They're going to have to bring it forward now that we know the feds are breathing down their necks. I'll find out when, give you the address. You can catch them in the act, deal with them yourself, take the proceeds, or not. Call the cops if you prefer, lead the feds there, whatever you want to do. I won't care, because I'll be in the wind. Nothing will be able to blow back on me." Reacher nodded his head slowly,
like he was considering a complex problem from every conceivable angle. So it costs me a day or two, but I get Fletcher, and you get away. I get away. And maybe one other thing, which is, Fletcher has a stash of cash. I know where it is. I figured there was nothing I could do about it. No way to get my hands on it before I go. Not on my own. But together, we could take it. Where is it? Not far away. I could take you there, then give you a ride afterward. Anywhere you want to go. Within reason. How do we get it? It's in a safe. The model doesn't matter. The point is, the lock's impossible to pick. Pretty much. Maybe three people in the world could do it, and neither of us is one of them. The door, the top, the sides, they're all too strong and too thick to cut or drill or blow a hole in with explosives. But it does have a weakness. The back. It's thinner. Thin enough to make it vulnerable to a shaped charge. The manufacturer was looking to save weight, I guess. Or money. I don't know. They figured they could get away with it because the safe is supposed to be attached to the wall and the floor. No one should ever be able to get to the back. But the safe isn't bolted down. Fletcher bought it cheap from someplace and just had it shoved against the wall. I can't move it. I've tried. It's too heavy. But Kane moved it. He installed it. And if Kane can move it, you can move it. Don't you think? Reacher looked at his wrist. He tried to flex it. A jolt of pain shot up his arm and down to his fingers. How much is in it? 2.2 million. Split how? 70-30. In my favor? Nice try. Reacher didn't reply. 60-40. 60 to me. Reacher said nothing. Okay, split 50-50. What do you say? Normally, I'd say you were crazy. Vidic spread his arms out wide. Does this look normal? So what's the plan? I take you somewhere safe, get you squared away, out of sight. Bring in a guy I know, a medic who you can trust. He'll take care of your wrist. Then I'll get you some food, some books, magazines, movies, whatever you want to pass the time until we need to move. That could work, but I still need the full nine on Fletcher and whatever kind of operation he's got going on. I'll give you chapter and verse, but not here, okay? Vidic pointed at the screen. We've pushed our luck far enough. The cops are bound to show up any time now. Reacher nodded and took a step toward the door, but Vidic didn't follow right away. He leaned down, took hold of the mouse, and started fiddling with it again. The screen switched back to its original 12 rectangles. Vidic selected the image of the driveway, and then a box appeared, demanding a password. Vidic hit a bunch of keys. 4 letters, 8 numbers, then 4 more letters, and the screen filled with tiny versions of the same scene. Each had a time and a date under it. Vidic selected the most recent, did something else with the mouse, and a cartoon trash can appeared. He did another thing, and the mini picture vanished. People say you can't erase history. Vidic turned and flashed a smile. Maybe that was true, before we had computers. Vidic took out his phone and tapped away at its screen for a moment. Reacher couldn't focus well enough to see exactly what he was doing. Vidic caught his eye and said, "Don't worry, just sending a message to the medic." Then he moved the pointer to the top of the screen and a list of options appeared. He picked Engage Privacy Mode and selected 15 minutes. "Now, I was never here," he said, "and we can leave together without being seen." Reacher said, "What about the kitchen and the hallway? There are cameras there too, right?" "Right. But the internal ones only record when the system is armed, and the system is only armed when no one is here. The external cameras are live all the time, in case anyone comes snooping around. Unless they're paused, like they are now, for another few minutes. So don't worry. We can go, and there'll be no trace. Vidic locked the heavy front door behind them and ushered Reacher over to the Jeep. It had protective mesh cages fixed over its rear lights, and a wide bull bar covering the whole of the front. Its bodywork was gleaming white, but its hood was finished with some kind of matte black coating. Reacher had seen vehicles set up that way before, in the desert, so that the sun wouldn't reflect off the shiny paint and dazzle the driver. He was no expert, but judging by the tires, he guessed the Jeep had never been anywhere more challenging than a parking lot. He shrugged to himself. He was never going to understand car people. Vidic drove fast, but he had the vehicle well under control. The road was twisty and rough, with trees on both sides. They were tall and close together, with few branches within reach of the ground. All the action was up high, where the leaves had to compete for the sunlight. The air in the Jeep was set low, and the stereo was playing acoustic rock uncomfortably loud, until Vidic switched it off and said, "The place we were just in was built in the 70s by a guy named Arthur Grumman. He was a real estate developer from Manhattan. Crime was bad in the city back then, I guess, so he figured rich folk could be lured out here to the Ozarks, where it was safe and beautiful. He completed half a dozen mansions. All are within a couple of square miles of one another. They did okay at first. The idea didn't stick in the long term, though. By the 2000s, people could hardly give the places away. We got ours for a song in 09 after the crash. Turned it into our studio. You're musicians. Artists. Started out with four of us. Paris, Bowery, O'Connell, and Gibson. I joined later. Paris is great with computers, so she handled the payments, that kind of thing. O'Connell dealt with the logistics. Art isn't easy to transport. You need special crates, things like that. They just did copies at first, legitimate stuff, for collectors mainly. People who don't want the real thing on their walls while they're on vacation or when they're having family with young kids to visit. But that morphed over time. They did a forgery for a gallery owner they met. Then they did a couple more. Then a lot more, until that was all they were doing. Enough to get the feds on your case? Not at all. They were discreet and careful who they sold to. There were no real victims. The buyers were all crooks themselves. No. The problems started when Fletcher came on board. He wanted contacts in the art world, but not so he could sell to them, so he could steal from them. He was aggressive, pushed us in a whole new direction, got us involved in disputes, violence. O'Connell got killed. So did some old dude. A retired cop working security at a place they hit. That's when he brought in Kane as muscle. Now Bowery's gone missing and Gibson turned out to be a fed. What a fiasco. It's not the organization I joined, not even close. You can see why I'm jumping ship. You joined when? I kind of replaced O'Connell. So around the same time Kane joined? Only I'm not crazy, and I'm not beholden to Fletcher. You can see why I'm leaving. It's not safe anymore. You're sure Gibson was a fed? Those guys generally don't advertise. I'm sure. How come? Kind of a fluke, I guess. He always used to disappear for a few hours, one day a week. I didn't think much about it at first. But when Bowery disappeared, I don't know, I got suspicious. So when I saw Gibson sneaking off today, I followed him. He went to a motel just off a highway exit, a big place with a gas station and a diner. I saw him go to one of the motel rooms. He knocked on the door, kind of in a funky rhythm, then went in. I caught sight of a woman waiting inside.
I was relieved at first. I thought he was there to see a hooker. But I crept up close and listened at the door. It felt a bit dirty, but I needed to be sure. And that's when I heard her say it. What?
Albatross.
Like the bird.
Right. Albatross.
So why is that such a big deal?
Because it's what she called him. Albatross. Not Gibson. It was a cover name, obviously. And who uses a cover name?
An agent, when he's undercover.
That's how those guys work.
You're sure about that?
100%. Everyone knows.
If you say so. And how did I end up in Agent Albatross's car?
He offered you a ride.
Why would he do that?
To thank you, I guess.
Thank me? For what?
Two punks tried to steal his Lincoln. You stopped them, laid one of them out.
He was leaving the motel room, saw what happened. He offered you some money. Looked like you turned it down and asked for a ride instead.
How do you know all that?
I was watching, from the diner. I was waiting to see him leave. You came in half an hour before. I heard you talking to the waitress.
What did I order?
A burger, a slice of pie, and black coffee. You had 3 refills.
Reacher shrugged. He couldn't remember doing that, but it sounded about right.
He said, so we drove off.
What did you do?
Waited to see what Gibson's handler did.
And?
She hung back in the room for a couple of minutes. Maybe she was giving him time to get clear so no one saw them together. Maybe she was sanitizing the room. Or sending in some kind of report. I don't know for sure. Maybe all 3 things.
Then what?
She came out, checked that the door was locked, walked to her car, drove away too.
She didn't check out, return the room key.
Vidic shook his head.
Just left.
What was she wearing?
She was dressed kind of casual. Jeans, white blouse, suit coat, flat shoes, necklace, no earrings.
Hair?
Blonde, shoulder length, tied back in a ponytail.
Age?
Vidic shrugged.
30s?
Was she carrying anything?
A purse, big enough to conceal a weapon, and a briefcase. Black leather, slim.
What kind of car?
A Charger. It was flat blue, poverty spec. 2 extra antennas, parked on the opposite side of the lot, well away from the room they were using.
What did you do after she left?
Got in my own car and headed to the house. Gibson's a slow driver. I'm not. I put my foot down, hoping to get there before him, knowing what I knew. But I caught up with him at the worst possible place. A switchback. A bad one. I startled him, I guess, and he lost control. The accident was my fault, if I'm honest. I stopped, tried to help, but it was no good. Gibson was dead. I was able to pull you out alive, at least.
That's something, right?
Chapter 6.
Vidic kept going north, pushing hard until they reached a string of tight switchbacks. Then he eased off the gas a little. The shoulder broadened as they approached a second turn, and Reacher saw a set of skid marks snaking across the pale asphalt. The rubber looked dark and fresh, and beyond it he saw a half-demolished tree at the side of the road and a gap that had been torn in the safety rail. Reacher said, "This is where the accident happened?"
Vidic glanced across at him.
"You recognize it?"
"No, I just put 2 and 2 together. Now, pull over. I want to take a look."
"That's not a good idea. The police, pull over."
The tone of Reacher's voice left no room for debate. Vidic did as he was told.
Reacher climbed out of the Jeep and moved closer to the spot where the skid marks began. They were a curious shape,
The tracks started out as one pair, straight and parallel. Then they divided. A loop ballooned to the right, all the way onto the shoulder, then curved back and rejoined the straight part. But only briefly, for maybe a foot. Then the marks careened to the left, winding up on the wrong side of the center line. Finally, almost at the apex of the curve, the marks disappeared. All of them. The pattern reminded Reacher of a rock star from a few years back who had started using a weird symbol in place of his name. Come on. Vidic appeared at Reacher's side. Let's get out of the road. It's not safe. You don't know how people around here drive. He took Reacher's arm and tried to pull him toward the shoulder. The vehicle rolled? Reacher gestured to the spot where the skid marks ended. Right. Vidic pulled harder. The back end stepped out heading into the bend. Gibson recovered it, almost, but he overcompensated, fishtailed the opposite way. Might have just slid off the road if he wasn't going so fast. Might have missed the tree. You said he was driving a Lincoln. Right, a Navigator. Newish. I doubt there was anything wrong with it. An SUV? Yes, a tall one. Probably top-heavy. That could have contributed to the rollover, I guess. Was it four-wheel drive? Vidic shrugged. Maybe. Or all-wheel drive. Or only rear, I don't know. I'm a Jeep guy. What color was it? Black. Why? What difference does that make? Just trying to get the full picture. Maybe jog my memory. Reacher had hoped that a sight or a smell or just being at the accident site would shake something loose, but nothing was coming back to him. It was like opening a door and staring into a pitch-dark room. He could sense something was there, but he had no idea what it was. Vidic didn't reply. Reacher said, "Where's the Lincoln now? Did it get towed?" "No." Vidic pointed to the gap in the safety rail. It should still be over there. Reacher walked across and looked down, but he couldn't see much. The whole gully was in deep shadow. Vidic caught up and tugged at Reacher's arm again. "We shouldn't be here. If the police find us," Reacher said, "you pulled me up from the bottom of that crevasse?" Vidic shook his head. "The Lincoln landed here on the shoulder. On its wheels. Fletcher told me to push it over the edge after we were done saving you and recovering Gibson's body. I think he was hoping it would catch on fire." "You called him?" "I had to." "When you found out about Gibson? At the motel by the highway?" Vidic paused for a moment. "You're thinking Fletcher set up some kind of ambush? Forced Gibson off the road?" Reacher said, "Did he?" "No. The crash was an accident, like I told you." "You sure?" "Positive. It had to be. I didn't call Fletcher until after the accident happened." "Gibson was dead by then." "He was." "So that's when you told Fletcher that Gibson was a Fed?" "Hell no. I never said a word about it." "Why not? Isn't that the kind of thing a boss would want to know?" "He would want to know, for sure. But I didn't tell him. Even if I'd wanted to, I couldn't have done it over the phone. Fletcher was paranoid about his calls getting tapped. We were all banned from using phones for anything sensitive, including landlines. He was dead serious about it. He'd have had my ass if I'd tried. So I'd have had to wait and do it in person. But it was his super-aggressive overexpansion bullshit that got the feds sniffing around us in the first place. It was O'Connell getting killed that gave them the way in. Or the retired cop. And it was his fault that those guys got killed at all. So screw him. Like I told you, I'm out of here. He can take his chances. So can Kane. I'm done." "Okay. So did you tell anyone else about Gibson?" "Who would I tell?
O'Connell's 6 feet under. Bowery's missing, presumed an asshole. There isn't anyone else.
You mentioned a woman. Paris. Vidic didn't reply. Reacher said, you're jumping ship. A woman's involved. You've denounced everyone else, but you're determined to keep the spotlight away from her. That math isn't hard to do, Ivan.
Vidic closed his eyes for a second. I haven't told her. Not specifically. Just that something came up and we need to split. Pronto. She doesn't know about you. Or about you helping me get Fletcher's cash. Or about me giving you Fletcher on a plate.
Is that wise? Keeping her in the dark?
How the hell would I know? I'm making this up as I go. The thing with Gibson only happened a few hours ago, and I've been busy saving your ass ever since.
Reacher and Vidic walked back to the Jeep together. As they got close, Reacher acted like he didn't want to squeeze along the whole way between the vehicle and the safety rail. He moved ahead of Vidic and looped around the front of the Jeep instead. Then, when Vidic opened the driver's door and started to climb in, Reacher took a moment to check the near side edge of the bull bar. It was made of metal tubing, an inch in diameter, and it was powder-coated solid black. The surface was mostly pristine, but there was a stretch about 6 inches high with a series of parallel scratches. It was as if the bar had recently been jammed against a wall. Or another vehicle. The scratches were deep. They revealed the bright steel beneath the coating, but Reacher could see no trace of any other shades of paint embedded in them. He thought about asking Vidic how the damage had been caused, but decided not to. There was no point. If he had anything to hide, Vidic was bound to lie, and no good could come out of making him suspicious. Vidic waited for Reacher to climb on board, then he fired up the engine. But before he pulled back onto the road, he took out his phone and typed a message. Reacher glanced at the screen. His sight was sharpening, and he could read the text without much difficulty. It said, ETA, 10 minutes. Vidic said, don't worry, it's to the medic again. Reacher said, who is this guy?
His name's Buck Holmes. He's good people. Navy, retired. Runs his own practice now. Sports injuries, mainly. Plus a few discreet jobs for people who don't want to generate any hospital records. If you know what I mean.
If you trust him, I'm happy.
Reacher had been treated by military doctors before, more than once. In his experience, they were highly competent, but less concerned about the cosmetic side of things than their civilian counterparts. And he had no problem with that. He said, where's there?
What?
Where we're meeting this medic, Holmes.
Oh, the motel where Gibson saw his handler, and you hitched a ride. It's the only place around here a stranger can show up and not attract attention.
The motel was on its own site, north of the highway, with entrances and exits fanning out to the east and west. The site was a large oval shape with a gas station at each end, a parking area in the center, and the motel and the diner Vidic had mentioned, plus a bunch of fast food outlets spaced out around the sides. Vidic pulled into a space on the edge of the lot, midway along the motel's facade. Reacher counted 20 rooms, 10, then an office, then 10 more. The place had a 50s vibe, all neon and chrome and Sputnik-shaped ornaments. It could have been cool, once, he thought, but now it looked tired and worn. The building's flat roof was in need of resurfacing, and its wooden siding could have used a coat of stain.
Stay here.
Vidic killed the engine and opened his door. He made sure to take his keys with him. I'll get you a room. Won't be long.
Reacher watched until Vidic disappeared into the motel office, then turned his attention to the diner. It was the next building in line.
It had a vaguely cutesy cottage appearance with window boxes and curlicues cut into the woodwork, but structurally, it was nothing special. The place could just as easily have been a convenience store or a dry cleaner. Reacher was more interested in its position than its architectural merit. It was set at an angle of maybe 30 degrees to the motel, so it was feasible for someone to have sat inside and to have seen a person leaving a particular room, as Vidic claimed to have done. Possibly. If he had been in just the right position, at just the right time, and no vehicles or pedestrians had blocked his line of sight. Vidic's story about watching Gibson's FBI handler leave the motel didn't pass the smell test easily, Reacher thought. But it didn't immediately fail either. He resented the ambiguity. But more than that, he resented the complete absence of recognition. Vidic said he'd been in this place before. The parking lot, the diner, that he'd been in a fight, hitched a ride. Yet the whole scene was utterly alien to him. He could have sworn he'd never seen any of it before. He could have taken a lie detector test and passed with flying colors. Chapter 7 Vidic returned after 5 minutes. Reacher climbed down from the jeep and Vidic handed him a plastic key card with a cartoon flying saucer printed on it in bright primary colors. You're in room 20, all the way at the end. Vidic locked the jeep with his remote, then started walking. The idea is to be invisible.